Got it.
Got it.
Tom Tangney here, not John Curley. This is the Tom and Curley Show. Tom Tangney here, John Curley away for the day, we presume, and Felix Spinell filling in. Again, thanks on relatively short notice, Felix. Thanks for doing this again. It's always fun.
Got it. You know, one thing that John does, I've noticed all the time, like to transition to another story, he'll say that the fact that people like mustard more than mayonnaise is setting some people off. You know. So I might just start saying the fact that when I want to transition to something else.
Yes, that's perfect. Somebody wrote in the other day, maybe it was last week, saying, why does John always say got it? Why does he start the hour saying got it? It's one of those inexplicable things that happens on the Tom and Curley show.
It's like, I think it's based on Car Talk and those two brothers who say, like, you know, Cambridge, Mass, our fair city.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Little inside radio there, sorry.
Anyway, yes, may one of them rest in peace. One of them is still in live, but a great, great show. Okay, so we're going to get a twofer today from the hardest working woman show business and or the reporting business. Let's introduce Hannah Scott, everybody. Greetings, Hannah.
Hello. How are you guys?
So I love this story you're about to tell us about people serving life with parole and their adjusted sentences. But before we do that, let's hit up the governor at another press conference. I assume that you monitored that. Any news of value at that press conference?
Yeah, a little bit of news for a value. He came out, and this was kind of just a general availability that he did. So he hit a couple of different things. First came out and, of course, had to give a kind of a consolatory shout out to the Zags, after the game. And that's what that was first.
Consolation.
First order
too soon.
Of business.
Too soon.
Too soon. But then, he turned to not the pandemic first. He wanted to go, and discuss some issues about homelessness. He said that, you know, the problem has only gotten worse, obviously, in the pandemic, and that's one thing that's happened. But at the same time, we've got this opportunity for federal dollars that have just come from this latest stimulus bill. So here's what he wanted to say.
I think that mutual investments and partnerships going forward should focus on strategies getting people off the street and under a roof with dignity and privacy, and that these facilities can have access to services like housing counseling to keep people under a safe roof. We hope that these increased investments will be made in mutual partnership with counties, cities, and towns across our state that actually are implementing these programs. So it is our hope, and I believe legislators' reasonable expectations, is that communities that would receive these additional funds that we will be proposing we'll have effective program strategies and implementation plans that will effectively transition people out of our public parks and right-of-ways and into secure housing that has the privacy that we know has been so effective.
So here's basically, he kind of backs into it, but what he's saying is we're already into the budget proposals and actually negotiations in the legislature right now. Both budgets, the House and the Senate, included a lot of money and also some stimulus money that was being used towards homelessness, but not enough for the governor. He wants more. So he's asking at this late date for them to put some more dollars in the budget for the specific purpose. Here's a little more about what he wants to see.
Specifically, I am proposing that the legislature appropriate federal American Rescue Plan dollars toward rapidly acquiring housing units, providing case management, and cleanup and rehabilitation of public spaces that have been used as encampments. This is an additional to the original budget requests I've made, in addition to the significant commitments that have already been made by the legislature.
So wait, that's money coming in, but it's not an actual, there's not necessarily a policy directive or there isn't necessarily the infrastructure in place to do what he's talking about. There's just the money to possibly fund it.
Well, that's what he said there in that first cut, is that the communities that will benefit from this money are going
to
need, they need to have that in place already. This is supposed to be a rapid rollout. And if you can't tell from what he's saying there, this is, it's essentially parallel to the charter amendment we just got in Seattle that they're trying to do. It's almost almost identical to that. And the idea is they've got this money. What I didn't hear, though, is, I mean, this would be one-time funding, so it's about, again, you're not going to wait to build, like, a shelter or something new. You're going to buy housing, and that's kind of where that focus is buying up hotels, motels, spaces, wherever you can get people off the streets in a quick fashion, basically.
Hmm.
And get them those wraparound services.
Which does require, I mean, that does require ongoing annual expense to manage those things properly. I do some video production work for the King County Housing Authority, and I've been following, like, public housing efforts for a long time. And, I mean, that stuff just doesn't, you can't just buy it and then just set it aside. Those have to be actively managed, and that's not inexpensive necessarily.
No, it's not inexpensive, but they've got this opportunity to use this money now, and then there's a clock on the funds from the stimulus bill, right? They have so long to use it. So, I don't know quite where this came from or why he decided to put this out there today, but it's a good idea, and it could make a difference, I think, same as the charter amendment if that ended up going through, that you get people off the streets in a quick fashion. And there are some cities and some counties that have these kind of wraparound services and things already up, or they contract with these folks. So I think what the idea is just to have more money to contract with more of them and buy more hotels or whatever spaces they might use, tiny homes and whatnot.
And on the pandemic front, I just was hearing our top of the news with Aaron. We may be rolling back in some counties.
We may be rolling back in some counties. So after he got through the homelessness, he was ready to talk pandemic.
The more folks that aren't wearing a mask, the more folks that aren't socially distancing, the more karaoke parties we have, like I read about in a county south of here that has now had a spike in part of that. Just letting our guard down is really, really dangerous, and we believe it is one of the reasons these numbers are increasing. So this is a critical moment, as it has been all year, to remain committed to those non-pharmaceutical interventions. The vaccine's great, but if these numbers skyrocket, that vaccine is not going to bail us out.
And the numbers are already, you know, going way, way up. Yesterday, I think he called an explosion of cases. I haven't seen today's numbers yet, but they definitely have been trending the wrong way, back above 1,000. I think yesterday was above 1,500 for at least a week now. So, and other states have seen similar things, although he did get into a discussion about California was not seeing that for whatever reason. But but we're in trouble. I mean, there's some counties in the state. I think the number I saw yesterday for Whitman County was like 379 cases per 100,000 people. There are counties already above the threshold for going back a phase to phase two. And, you know, he didn't come right out and say it. They're going to say it when they look at the numbers on Monday, which is what they do. And he did make clear it's whatever the numbers say, that's what's dictating whatever happens. It's not me. And I would be shocked if we don't have several counties go back a phase.
Yeah. And channeling John Curley in his honor, since he's not here, I have to ask this question. John would be quick to point out that, okay, so they are on the rise, but we're nowhere near having a run, you know, in the ICU units and all of this. Why is there a need to shut down or go back when it's clearly not as bad as it was at its worst, correct?
It's not as bad as it was at its worst, but it's still worse than some of the time that we've seen. First of all, it's worse than it was at the beginning. Still, it's not as bad as the biggest wave that we had. But the concern is always going to be a couple of things. One, hospitalizations are on the rise, and they have been for the last since mid-month, is what I've been told, in King County, in Snohomish County. And the numbers are not astronomical. It's the trend, right? And if that trend keeps happening, if that growth keeps happening, then you end up getting the exponential growth, and then everybody's in trouble. That's once you get to exponential growth, so they get very concerned.
You can even get exponential growth even though a third of us are vaccinated now? See, that's
20%. 20% still of us are vaccinated.
The dominant variant right now is more easily transmitted than the previously dominant variant. I mean, they're about a week or two ahead of us. In British Columbia, they shut down like last week. They shut down, went back a few notches, just like what's probably going to happen here. They did that in Canada last week.
Crucially, though, in Canada, they're way behind us in terms of vaccines. I just keep thinking as bad. I mean, I've never minimized the threat of COVID-19. I think John is more on that side of the ledger. But it does seem to me that whatever threats are happening, given the fact that so many of us are getting vaccinated, and if our vaccinations are like 90% good, I just think that the peak is not going to be nearly what it was pre-vaccination, and we're getting thousands every day of more vaccinations. I'm surprised there's that much alarm, I guess.
There's alarm for a few reasons. One, we've got a shortage. We're not getting the supply that we thought we were going to get because of that mistake at the...
Oh, the vaccines?
The factory, right? So we're not going to be getting as much as
Johnson,
we thought.
Johnson.
And once again, we heard from the governor today, there are a lot of seniors who are not getting their vaccines. There is hesitation on the eastern side of the state for people getting vaccines. That's a problem. And I can't say this enough, and I've been saying it since the beginning, and... The variant is a big deal. I think the UK variant is the dominant strain now, and it is also it's more transmissible, and it's also been proven to be more deadly in some cases. Beyond that, it's still only been a little over a year, guys. They don't know enough about this, that is always why you're going to get some of that hesitation. I want to point out, though, while he did indicate that we could see some counties go back to phase two on Monday, that will not mean the closure of any businesses. That would mean a reduction in capacity. Okay. So it'll just be like 25% instead of 50%.
Instead of 50%. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good enough. Okay. Felix, do you have any last questions? Because I want to get to this interesting story about the resentencing if we have had.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay. So the floor is yours, Hannah.
Thank you. There's a lot of stuff going on in the legislature, and a big part of it is criminal justice reform. There are a bunch of bills. This is one of the biggies. It has to do with the three strikes law. And essentially, I don't know if you remember, I think it was a session or two ago where the legislature passed a bill to end, I think it's first degree robbery or second degree robbery. Second degree robbery, remove that as one of the three strikeable offenses, which it had been for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And then there was this concern at the time, well, if they do this now, then they're going to end up wanting to do something more later. But what they did a couple of years ago, it was a moving forward bill, right? So it was anybody from now on, you won't get the third strike for this.
Right.
But there was nothing to do for those who were still sitting in jail because they had their third strike that was a second degree.
Nothing retroactively.
Right, nothing retro. Yeah. So that's what this does. It addresses that so that there's a handful of people, I think, still serving time because that was one of their three strikes, and this will get them out of prison. And it's just a little over 100 people, I think, but it led to some feisty debate on the floor.
That a previous legislature passed the three strikes law because people in Washington state were tired of persistent offenders.
I would love the opportunity to go back and restore justice for those that were improperly sentenced under a three strike law for committing robbery one. We all don't always have an opportunity to right the wrongs that we were a part of. This bill is not a miscarriage of justice. This bill brings proportionality, which is a fundamental part of justice.
So this will have all of those 114 people it is that are still serving time because they had one of these as their third strike or one of their three strikes will be resentenced now. And it could be their path out of jail. So I think the judges have discretion and can look at, the totality of whatever their situation was with all three strikes. But if they weren't as bad as one might think, then perhaps you're going to leave.
From what I've read about this, this isn't like, they get a get out of jail a free pass.
No.
What it does is it returns. So we had the three strikes law says that you have life in prison. You still have to serve time. In fact, the Seattle Times article interviews a guy who's been in prison for like 14 years. And he figures if he gets this three strikes your law out, out from under him. He still has to serve like another 7 years. He's still going to send like 20 years in prison. It's just at that point, he has hope of getting out, right? This
and
is not something
difference.
Like opening
no, yeah,
all
you're
the...
not getting a free release. That's what
right.
you... It requires resentencing. So, again, it will be up to the judge. They'll have to look at the sentencing and, numbers and things like that.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, too, that in terms of the compromise, in order to get enough votes, that this still, it's not like automatically, okay, if you've been convicted of a second-degree robbery, we now, you know, take that off the list. You now have to have a judge look at each and every one individual case and then resentence them so that some mm-hmm. may be getting off carte blanche, and I don't mean that they don't have to serve time, but they do not have to have it credited. It sounds like they think, well, maybe this could justify a third strike, even if in the law we're now saying it's only a second-degree burglary isn't a third strikeable.
Do you remember that campaign, Tom, back in the early 90s? It passed with something like 76% of a yes vote. It was a ballot measure to pass that law. And it was in the wake of a lot of really sensational crimes where people who
would have
been locked up had committed
Well, in the crime bill in Congress, I mean, this is the early 90s.
It's sort of a hangover from that period that we're sort of reassessing right now. And it's a few hundred people. So it makes sense to reevaluate this. And
it's a few hundred people that are disproportionately people of color. That's what's driving this.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
And you've got multiple prosecutors who are concerned about that. Adam Cornell, the prosecuting attorney for Snohomish County, is concerned. And he likes the law, right? I know him, and he likes to... get people on the right path, but if you break the law, he wants you to do your time. But he also is very concerned about the disproportionality that we've seen with specifically the laws like this. This is the law, the three strikes law, came from that era that you guys were talking about with the crime bill and all of that, the tough on crime, the war on drugs, all of that literally was so disproportionately affecting people of color, specifically black people, who have now suffered generational harms, is the argument, because of that.
And the next step, they say, the people that are moving this, they would like to consider dropping the second degree assault as a third strike qualifier as well. I understand from the Seattle Times article that not everybody, like you mentioned this, Cornell, he's not ready to sign off on that categorically, that should be included. But that could be the next shoe to drop.
Sure. And there's going to be some pushback on stuff like that, because look, there are people in the legislature who are state lawmakers who really want just about everyone out of prison because it's not been proportional, and because they don't believe it creates better public safety for people to have that hope, for people to go back and have a chance to do something with their lives and things like that. You just keep the worst of the worst in prison. So you're going to get those kind of proposals. How many of them pass, we'll see.
Yeah. Next session, maybe.
Next session, not this year.
That's terrific. Okay, thanks a lot, Hannah, for your great reporting, as usual. All right, and now we turn to Tracy Taylor to let us out of our traffic prison. You're listening to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here. John Curly unexpectedly out today. I assume he'll be back tomorrow and filling in. Somebody who's strutting around right now, I'm pretty sure, because he got called out by Aaron Granillo, a shout-out, Felix Bunnell. You're feeling pretty good about yourself right about now, huh?
Well, all I did was do my job, and we'll talk about it in the 5 o'clock hour, I think, right?
Perfect.
Yes, excellent. Little really long-distance tease there.
Exactly.
Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. Stay in the driveway.
You know,
it's going to be a driveway moment for the next 4 hours.
And when you're talking about archives, nobody hits the driveway as well as a tease for archive news. So anyway, I'm really happy that you're here, Felix. And this is it's funny, the kinds of stories that Jacob runs across, I think they just, it's the kind of the absolute coincidental manner, but a lot of these stories seem perfectly up Felix Bunnell's alley, and I don't know if we have more permission to do these kind of stories since you're here or not. This is the kind of story that John and I would love to do, too. I love this. BBC Future has this article out called The Moments That Could Have Accidentally Ended Humanity, which, if that isn't clickbait, at least for BBC readers, I don't know what is. And they talk, and it's a review of moments when it could have been catastrophe And yet we dodge the bullet, so we don't even act as if the bullet ever existed. So there are a number of these. I want to start with one, especially since my mom's cousin, Richard F. Gordon, was an astronaut, and he was on the second moon flight. He was the like Michael Collins. He stayed in the capsule. Anyway, he was all through the Gemini stuff. So I have a particular fondness for astronauts and space travel, or, you know, NASA and all this. And they cite the very first time we had the success. Successful launch of with Apollo 11 was it
when they first
come back, when they re-entered, there were two big scientific concerns. One is that for the first time we're going to go up to the moon, that could we be bringing some bad microbes or something that could in effect pollute, for want of a better word, and contaminate something in space. That was one, and that's why they always were sterilizing everything they possibly could when they shot them up. But maybe the bigger concern was when they re-entered, again, no one had ever done this in the history of humanity. Could we be bringing back some kind of potentially catastrophic element that could destroy our atmosphere or create organisms that would devour all the earthly organisms from wherever we were? And the scientists had to make this decision. Was this worth it or not? And they took it very seriously, even though it was only like less than 1% of a chance, they thought.
How do they get that 1% figure? I wonder.
Hey, I was going to ask you. You're the historian. I know. I love this idea. You know, what are the chances?
They thought that, you know, when the capsule landed there in the Indian Ocean and they went to get the astronauts, the idea was that they were going to move the whole capsule onto the deck of the carrier and then put them into quarantine, directly into quarantine, so there'd be no exposure from these two guys who'd been on the surface of the moon and a third guy who'd been sitting with them, Michael Collins, for, you know, the return trip. They thought they might be carrying bacteria or viruses or who knows what. And so, but it was so hot and stuffy in that capsule, they decided to take them out of the capsule and put them in rafts and then take them to the aircraft carrier and put them in quarantine there. So they were in quarantine, but there was a time when they weren't in quarantine. And maybe it's just lucky, or maybe they were right. Maybe there was only 1% chance, but nobody who came in contact with them died from some moon virus or something. But I like the hubris of science. I mean, that's arguably the greatest achievement of mankind, to get men to the moon and back safely, right? But the fact that there were these little kind of niggling things, like, oh, what if they come back and bring this deadly virus? But they went ahead and did it anyway. And phew, they were wrong. There was no chance whatsoever. So, I love the way it turned out. I love the fact that it could have gone all wrong. I don't know if you ever look on YouTube, but I like to look up Nazi V2 rocket failures. There's all these great clips of V2 rockets on the launch pad there in France somewhere, or Holland, tipping over and exploding, and all these guys clutching their Nazi helmets and running for the woods and stuff as these big white explosions engulf these whole buildings and stuff. You don't see anyone killed, but you see the hubris or the failure of these, you know, beautifully designed, scientifically prepared rockets just all going to hell.
But, you know, as astronauts, again, I'm showing my age. You're not significantly younger than I am, but do you remember Ed White? Ed White was like the John Glenn of, you know, of astronauts. He was just super popular, and he died in one of the early prototypes going up. And they all said these are the risks that you take. You really don't know. And so we have to honor the fact that these, you know, these astronauts were risking their lives, and it cost a number of them their lives. Difference
with Apollo 1, with that one, Ed Chaffee, White, and Grissom in particular, I think they were talking about astronauts from 55 years ago. This is great. mission accomplished, as far as I'm concerned. The fact they were, that capsule that they were practicing in on Apollo 1 was filled with pure oxygen. It's no wonder it exploded when there was an electrical malfunction. I guess easy to say in hindsight, right?
Yeah.
But they figured out from that experiment, that not to put raw oxygen in the capsule. So.
But the point I think that's fascinating about this article is that's one thing when you've got people brave enough to put their lives at risk. That's one thing. They make that decision. But the point of this article is that these decisions are made for the rest of us without any input from us. I mean, they said, so this risk, for instance, and they mentioned, you know, when we were working on the atomic bomb as well. Who knew the dangers? Well, most government officials weren't informed. Obviously, you have to keep a tight circle. And so you end up putting the fate of humanity possibly in the hands of academics, scientists, maybe, you know, a government, you know, official or something. I don't know who you'd consider. Obviously, you'd have to get the president involved as well. But it's just what's fascinating is that these were a handful of men, and I assume they were mostly men in that era, were making decisions that put all of our lives at risk. And we certainly wouldn't be telling other countries about it, but they didn't tell other Americans. In fact, even our representatives, for the most part, didn't know about this. But again, that's hubris. But without that hubris, we wouldn't have made the advances that we've made.
Yeah, and that atomic bomb in particular. I mean, the test explosion in the New Mexico desert in 1945. This is before they dropped bombs on Japan.
Right.
At the test there at Trinity site, there were a few scientists who thought maybe it was a 1% chance that the bomb would actually ignite the atmosphere and the whole Earth would go up in flames, water would evaporate, and we'd all just die from thirst or from whatever. But there was just a slim chance that might happen. And apparently, at least one person watching thought the explosion went on a little bit longer than expected and thought, in fact, the atmosphere was igniting and that we'd started a chain reaction that wasn't ever going to stop. So thank goodness that turned out the way it did. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't be doing this 3 or 4 hours of radio fun right now. Right?
Yeah, that's right. He was the president of Harvard. So he was some smart guy. And he admitted he got it wrong. And, and I thought even in these catastrophic historical events that we're considering saying, that was a close call. I love the fact that NASA was in a battle with what else? The U.S. Public Health Service, which is something we're dealing with right now. They were trying to put pressure on them. He said, listen, you don't know what you're bringing back. It's a matter of public health. You have to make sure they're sterilized. Everything is, decontamination. I think they didn't get to see their families for like 3 weeks after they landed to be safe. And they said NASA went along with it somewhat begrudgingly. But even then, and that's what I love about that story about the astronauts is, even after they had all these elaborate efforts at trying to, containment was, the order of the day. They decided they broke their own rules and had just this gap of the time opening up the capsule, which could have let out whatever, airborne organisms could have flown out. And they took them to...
Wait. Who knows? Maybe the virus did escape from the capsule 54 years ago.
That's right. And we never know. So anyway, it's an entertaining article about the kind of risks that were taken for us, for the advancement of science and space travel, perhaps, but put us all at risk, and we were oblivious of it, intentionally oblivious. Again, I hope traffic is as beautiful as the day it's in the midst of. You're listening to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Dangney here. Felix Bunnell filling in for John, who will be back tomorrow, we assume. One of the silver linings, Felix, of the sad news of Alex Trebek's death is that the show decided to do a string of celebrity guest hosts. It started off with Seattle's own Ken Jennings, who is the most natural replacement I can imagine, since he was the biggest winner they've ever had there, the longest winner. But to me, maybe the most intriguing of the guest hosts they have is on, apparently right now, he's in the midst of a 2-week run, and that's Aaron Rodgers, the MVP quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. Apparently he's a huge fan. He's won Celebrity Jeopardy in the past, and he's filling in, and that's caused all sorts of buzz about what his future may hold. I watch a lot of sports shows, and all the headlines they love to put up there. Aaron Rodgers in jeopardy? ? His career and all this. It's just the issue of a sports, a jock, basically doing something that nerds are famous for. Seems to be this great coming together of two distinct versions of people. And we want to play a couple of clips. This is initially from the show, just to get you a sense of how much fun people are having with the show. This works better on TV, but there is a guy in Final Jeopardy who is, it turns out he wagered zero, so he wasn't risking anything. So he put down as his Final Jeopardy answer kind of a crack at Aaron Rodgers' expense. In the playoffs, the coach decided to kick a field goal with like 2 or 3 minutes left in the game when they were down by 8, rather than going for fourth down, and they never got the ball back, and that might have cost Aaron Rodgers a chance to go to the Super Bowl. This is how the Final Jeopardy answer played out.
Scott, did you come up with the correct response? Who wanted to kick that field goal? That That is a great question. Should be correct, but unfortunately for this this game today, that's incorrect, and you're going to lose 0. Thank you for that, and congrats on your 2-day win streak.
Okay,
you know, he's a little rough around the edges. I mean, as you'd expect.
Yes.
You know, Alex Trebek did it, what, for like 35 years or something like that?
Yeah.
Super smooth. And a lot of the replacements, that producer who came in and did just a week's worth of episodes, that's been my favorite guest host so far. Because he seems like
the most unlikely,
total dark horse. I've seen some of the clips of like Katie Couric or Dr. Oz. Dr. Oz is probably my least favorite. I wouldn't want to watch that guy do anything.
Well, you know, he got the most political flack for it because for a show that's about facts, something like a third of the things that he's recommended on his own show have been proven not to be scientifically.
That'd be like getting Dr. Scott Atlas to host Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that might be more appropriate, actually. But still, anyway, there is speculation that he would like to do this full time. We don't have time to play all the clips. He would like to do this full time. He's such a Jeopardy fan, and they figured out that he could do, since you tape a bunch of the shows, all in a row, that in the off season he could do enough shows to do a year's worth of Jeopardy and still play in the NFL. I mean, that would be, although it might say, give somebody else a chance. You already got a great job.
A few more game-ending field goals like that, he'll have plenty of time on his hands to do whatever he wants.
That's right. And by the way, that clip from Jeopardy, that passes for uproarious laughter on Jeopardy. Wasn't that funny? But
yeah, exactly.
Given the contestant's seriousness in that game, that was a pretty good shot. Okay, so much good luck, Aaron, with the rest of your 2-week run, and I hope the Seahawks knock you off for the Super Bowl position next year as well. Tracy Taylor, how do things look?